Hey, it's you, man, from KC95 here. Good evening and welcome to Toasted Tavern. Your host, Scott Tobin, and the man called Wags are ready to bring you the night in sports. So pull up a stool, grab a drink, and let's get toasted.
And good evening and welcome into the Toasted Tavern. I am Michael Wags, Wagon Connect, joined alongside by Scott Tobin. Yes, it's been a week, and boy, has it been a week. We won't necessarily get into the craziness that was our week, but it's nice to be back. Glad to be talking about sports and somewhat rested. Scott, man, how are you doing?
I'm doing all right, man. Doing all right. Long week, like you said, not as long as yours was, but my week was long and it was good to get back. I called some high school football on Friday, so it's good to see, even though it was really hot and definitely didn't feel like football weather, it was good to get out and have that go on Friday night. So that was nice. And then, we're in the heart of sports season right now.
That we are. We've got high school football starting up, like you said. We're in the pennant races for Major League Baseball. Football's getting ready to start. We're going to have training camp for the NHL and NBA starting up really, really soon. And all of college football, too, is going on. So it is one of the best times of the year. Who did you have on Friday night that you got a chance to call?
I was out in Washington. I saw the Washington Blue Jays and the Union Wildcats. And both of those teams last year were really good. Washington lost their district championship game last year to Battle. Union made it to the state quarterfinals in 4A football last year, the semifinals, actually, I should say. So both of those teams have most of their starters coming back. Washington struggled a little bit with turnovers on Friday night, turned the ball over 5 times. It was 21-21 going into the fourth quarter. Union ended up winning 42-21. But I'll tell you what, Union's got a really they've got a good young quarterback, and they've got a bunch of receivers. They're going to be tough. And for a looking at their schedule, they may go undefeated during the regular season, and then we'll see where they go in the playoffs.
That is incredible. Yeah, we've got a lot of really, really good football in this state, really. I mean, you look at the Kansas City side, you look down at the Columbia area, and then out here as well. I get my my high school slate underway this Friday. I get to travel to Fox and do the Fox and Rittner game. That should be a lot of fun. And then the following game I get is Fox versus my alma mater, Pattonville. So I'm very, very excited for that one. Who do you got coming up this week?
This week I'm actually going to see Union again. Union's taking on St. Francis Borgia, who is normally pretty good in 3A, but they're kind of rebuilding. So that may be an ugly game this year because Borgia's really young. And like I said, Union's pretty talented. So it'll be interesting to see how that game goes. I don't know if you got to watch any of the highlights. Well, I know you probably didn't because you were busy this weekend. But man, oh, man, you want to talk about a kid in the area that's just an absolute stud. Everybody in Mizzou salivating since he got out of his commitment to Oklahoma. But Luther Burden, man, is just unbelievable. He had 4 touchdowns of over 65 yards on Friday night. And he did it in every aspect. He did it kick return. He did it punt return. He did it as a wide receiver. He even ran one. He's the top wide receiving prospect in the country for a reason. And, you know, it still sounds like it's Mizzou and Georgia pretty much, and everybody seems to think he's going to go to Mizzou. Let's hope that happens, because if he goes there with what the weapons that they've got already committed for next year and the next couple of years, that team's going to be really, really tough in the SEC.
And they're going to need it because you've got the likes of Oklahoma and Texas eventually going to be populating into the SEC. So you want to be the big dog when those teams come in and show that you can knock them in their teeth and be the class of that SEC side of things when those two teams enter in there, because it's, you don't want it to be like the Big 12 all over again, where it seemed like Mizzou was kind of, you know, second, third, sometimes even fourth fiddle to teams like that. You want them to say, okay, we came to the SEC to get competition. Oh crap, Mizzou's really, really good. And if you get a player like that along with what they've already got with Coach Drink, yeah, Texas and Oklahoma better watch out. They may get more than they bargained for.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. The SEC is going to be fun. And Mizzou starts on Saturday, so that'll be exciting. And while we're talking about college football, congratulations to any and all Illini fans that are watching this week. The Brett Bielema era got underway, and they beat Nebraska, which was big for them. I mean, Nebraska's not what Nebraska used to be, but still, you know, with all the struggles that Illinois have had over the last few years to beat the Cornhuskers to start the season, that's big.
And they also did that with their quarterback going out as well. So right. It's not like it was all hands on deck. They were able to win without their starting quarterback. I haven't heard if he's going to make a return yet. I don't know how serious the injury was. But to do that without your starter as well, it shows you that they can rally around their team and produce big time when a star player potentially goes down.
Yeah, yeah. You know, give a little optimism to the Illinois football fans because it's been a while since they've had a whole lot to get excited about in Illinois.
Well, they thought with Lovie Smith coming in that they were going to be able to produce something big, and it just didn't seem to work out. But like you said, Bielema in there could do a lot of things to really pump up that Illinois side of things. Because, you know, when you get back to Mizzou, Illinois playing again real soon, you want both teams to be top notch. And we might be on a collision course for a really, really good border war when those two teams match up in the near future.
Yeah, let's hope so. I mean, it's good for everybody if those two teams are competitive and those can be fun games.
And then you said Mizzou starts their season this week. They host Central Michigan. Tigers are just a 63% consensus to win. And the over-under in this game is 60.5. So this may not be a cakewalk for the Tigers. This could be a fun, fun game, though, coming up on Saturday.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. You know, a lot of the national media is still not real sold on Mizzou yet. You know, they're not sure how good Eli Drinkwitz is, if that was just kind of a flash in the pan, you know, a couple-year wonder, and people are going to catch on to him. So Mizzou's got a lot to prove to the national media, and there's still a lot of questions about that Mizzou defense. You know, they had a bunch of people move on, and so it'll be interesting to see how they come out Saturday, and hopefully they play well. I'm looking forward to watching some Mizzou football.
That I am as well. All right, let's jump into what's actually going on right now, and that is baseball. And before we get into the Cardinals, we have to wish a happy 40th birthday to the ageless wonder, Mr. Adam Wainwright. Congratulations on another stud season. I mean, this is from Katie Wu over on Twitter. He's second in the National League in innings pitched, third in wins, eighth in hits, ninth in walks per nine in whip, 10th in ERA, and he's tied for a league high in complete games with 3. This dude just turned 40 today, and he's one of the top pitchers in the league. We talked last week about, you know, could he be in the Cy Young conversation? And you said no, rightly so. Older guy, there's a lot of names out there, younger guys that could potentially, you know, take that hold. But I tell you what, he gets a couple more, and I think you flipped a little bit as well. If he puts up a couple more quality starts, maybe another complete game, he deserves at least something in the Cy Young voting.
Yeah, you know, I said last week I didn't think that he would get much consideration. I'm changing my tone a little bit. You know, like you said, he's 13-6. He's moving up the ranks in National League pitchers. You know, if he would go into September and say he goes 3-1 and 4 or 4-0, you know, and he ends up being, you know, 17-7 or something like that with a sub-3 ERA and is in the top 2 or 3 in innings pitched. And again, we're going to say this because as frustrating as they are, they're right there knocking on the door of the playoffs. If they get to the playoffs and he puts up those numbers, he's got to be in consideration. Do I think he'll win? No, but I think he's got to be in those top 4 or 5 semifinalists.
He has to be. I mean, to see what this team has gone through and to be where they're at, yes, they have to take advantage of some poor play by teams like San Diego, who's just absolutely tanked over the last couple of weeks. But he has to be in there. And Steve chimes in. Scott Tobin has always been super knowledgeable in sports. Love watching my buddy. Feels like we are sitting at Poor Richards.
Thanks, Steve. Thanks for watching, bud.
But like you said, he has to at least get some consideration for the Cy Young if he does get to that mark. Because like you said, the Cardinals, after tonight's win against Cincinnati, are 2.5 games out of the wild card. And yes, we've been saying this for the last couple weeks that they've been within 2.5, 3.5, 4.5, 5.5 games, and yet there's that yo-yo effect where they get close and then they drop back, then they get close again and they drop back. But it's only mainly because of Adam Wainwright. I mean, the season he's had this year has been what has kept them in contention. He's the guy that stopped the bleeding. He's the guy that started runs. He's even out there, you know, knocking in RBIs. I mean, he knocked in an RBI on Saturday's 13-0 win against the Pirates. So he's doing everything right now, and it's amazing considering his age.
Yeah, it really is. It really is. You know, he's finally completely healthy and feels good again. You know, I mean, he's on pace to have more wins than he's had since 2014, the year before he had the Achilles injury. So, I mean, we're talking about more wins than he's had in 7 years. And, I mean, to bounce back, everybody thought his career was over after that. We all remember how badly he struggled in 16 and 17. And We thought 4 years ago he was done, and look what he's just progressively gotten better the last 3 years. And, you know, well, next year maybe the end of Adam Wainwright. Who knows? I'm not going to say it is. You know, I know Yadi said, you know, next year will definitely be it. But we've heard Yadi say that before. You know, maybe – who knows, man? If the two of them go out and play like this again, let's keep it going. And, you know, all the speculation, all the rumors, and it's even starting to come nationally now is that, you know, it won't just be the swan song for the two of them. The story that we've talked about for, what, over a year now, the potential of the designated hitter and old number five coming back to St. Louis and the three of them finishing this together may just happen, because I think all three of them would love that opportunity to play one last year, make one more run at the postseason, and then be able to ride off into the sunset together. They would all be eligible to go into the Cardinal Hall of Fame the same year. They'd all be eligible to go into the Major League Baseball Hall of Fame the same year. You know, it would just be fitting to see Albert come back and the three of them ride off into the sunset with that 12th World Championship ring.
And you don't see that. I mean, especially nowadays, you don't see guys, A, completing their career with the same team that they started with, and B, getting back together with some of the guys that they grew up with, and then maybe even ending it on a championship run. It's just something you don't see. And, you know, for all the, I mean, people can give Cardinals fans as much crap as they want for being the best fans in baseball and all this stuff. But to say that we have something special here in St. Louis, I think is really an understatement, because outside of like the Yankees, the Red Sox too, maybe even the Cubs, there's not a whole lot of places that you would sit there and go, okay, I could see this happening, where you get two guys back together at the end of their career to really just go out on top and then even have the chance to actually do it. And the Cardinals have that ability, because it's not just those three guys coming back and you're wishing that the old guys can do it, but you've got the Goldschmidts and the Arenados and Dylan Carlson and Harrison Bader and Tyler O'Neill. You're gonna have a Nolan Gorman coming up. You know, we heard the story today you brought up before we came on about Trevor Story might be a guy that you could get on a 1 year deal. You know, maybe an incentive laden high price contract, but you might be able to bring in a Trevor Story to add to that as well. So it's not just the three old guys coming back like the three amigos to kind of go out on top. You've got a team that, with those guys added, could be something that goes much further than just next year.
Yeah, because a lot of people are going to say, oh, you know, that would just be a ploy to sell tickets or whatever, you know, bring those three guys. But if you could go out and get Trevor Story and you bring Albert in, and then, you know, the young kids, it looks like Nolan Gorman will be ready next year. We may see him at the end of September. Who knows? I mean, he's tearing it up in AAA. You know, you add that prospect to your lineup, Dylan Carlson's going to be a year better. You know, Matthew Liberatore is probably going to be ready to make the jump up here next year. Dakota Hudson's going to be back. Jack Flaherty's going to be back. I mean, you talk about a team that really could have the potential to really make a run. And if you had a lineup, just think about this for a second. Imagine if you go out there on opening day next year, and in the middle of your lineup somewhere, you know, you have, let's say you have Dylan Carlson hitting second, then you go Goldie, Arenado, Albert, or actually I guess you would go Goldie, Arenado, Story, Albert, Tyler O'Neill, Nolan Gorman, Yadi, and then Harrison Bader to end your line. I mean, that's a pretty good middle of your lineup.
Yeah, but you still need the guy at the top of the lineup to set the tone. And that's the other piece that the Cardinals are going to have to look at in the offseason as well. And yeah, we're getting a little bit ahead of ourselves because we're talking about next year. We're still in the here and now. And you brought up a guy like Jack Flaherty, and you brought up a Dakota Hudson as well. Both of those guys dealing with injuries at this point. Dakota Hudson got back on the mound tonight down in the minors to start his rehab assignment, 30 pitch limit tonight. So he's kind of on his way back. Not necessarily a guy that you're going to rely on at the end of the year, but you're hoping you can get him into some games to just get some reps and see what he's got to prepare him for next year. But then the other guy is Jack Flaherty, and good news, no structural damage. It looks like just rest, rehab, and then just the resumption of throwing should be okay for him. The question becomes, though, you know, they're 2.5 games out of the wild card. What's the number of games back this team has to be when Flaherty kind of resumes throwing for you to be like, okay, I feel comfortable pushing him back into the rotation to make a run of the playoffs versus kind of just shutting him down for the rest of the year and making sure he's healthy next year?
I don't know that they're going to shut him down. I mean, I think they're going to let him throw on the side and see how he feels. And then I'm not sure that there is a number, honestly. I think it's just going to all come down to how he feels, long tossing or whatever they're allowing him to do. And then you see. I mean, they're not going to be like, oh, my God, we're only a game out. We got to get Jack back out there and risk losing him next year when, you know, best case scenario, you're going to play a one-game playoff and hope you can beat the Dodgers, probably. I mean, that's basically what this year is going to come down to. And, you know, they could. You know, it could happen. But, yeah, I don't think there's a number. I think it's just going to all come down to how Jack feels, and they're going to be super cautious with him. And the same thing with Dakota. Like you said, you know, he's not going to start any games or anything this year. But, you know, hopefully you can get two or three bullpen outings out of him at some point in September just to let him feel comfortable, know that he can go out there and do it and throw some pitches and be ready for spring training. And, yeah, I mean, that's the big thing. And then, you know, the other question they got to look at now is what do you do with Alex Reyes? You know, we've talked about the Cardinals kind of making a run, you know, and they beat Cincinnati, and we'll talk about that here in a minute. But they're 2.5 games out of Cincinnati, behind Cincinnati after winning tonight. But it just makes what happened in Pittsburgh this weekend that much more painful because the bullpen just self-destructed twice. You should have swept Pittsburgh. You should have a 5-game winning streak right now. You know, you had a 7-1 lead on Thursday night, and Hennessy Cabrera just self-destructed. And, you know, Mike Schilt's response afterwards was almost as irritating as the actually watching the game because he almost acted mad that people questioned why he didn't take him out of the game. And then, you know, last night, same thing yesterday. You know, you got that 3-1 lead going into the ninth inning. Alex Reyes has kind of struggled a little bit. And, you know, I know people are jumping off the Alex Reyes bandwagon saying, oh, man, you know, he's no good. You know, just sit him in the bullpen and don't let him pitch anymore. The guy's blown 3 saves. You know, people have to remember that he's thrown more innings this year than he's thrown in 2 or 3 years. You know, so there's some tiredness in his arm. He's making some mistakes. He's throwing some balls down the middle. But, you know, the Cardinals have to be smarter than they were yesterday. You know, I mean, he comes out, he walks the first guy, he gets the second guy to ground out, and then he walks the third batter in the lineup on 4 pitches, and they don't even have anybody warming up in the bullpen. You know, and Dan McLaughlin actually called him out on that during the television broadcast and said, how in the world do you not have somebody else warming up right now? And then the next pitch he threw was right down the middle, and it was hit into the Allegheny River. So, you know, we've just seen some bad bullpen management by Schilt or Mad Dog or whoever you want to blame it on, but they've got to be smarter with this bullpen. When somebody starts struggling, you've got to have another guy warming up ready to come in. You know, I know you've counted on Reyes and Cabrera and Gallegos, but when you look at what especially Reyes and Gallegos have done in August, Gallegos' ERA is over 6, and Reyes is pushing 5. So, you know, you've got to count on some other guys, and you've got to be ready to get them out of there when they struggle because they are a little bit worn down at this point. You know, maybe you do take Alex Reyes out of that closer spot for a little while. You know, not permanently, but maybe you move him and make him more of a long guy. Try to stretch him out a little bit. I mean, I know I just talked about him throwing more innings than he had all year, but if he's going to be a starter next year, you know, you've still got to stretch him out because, you know, going into the season, they talked about 100 innings they wanted out of him. He's thrown like 65. So you've still got a long way to go to get him to a close to 100 innings where you can go into next year. Because if you get into if he only throws 80 innings this year, then what can your expectations be next year as a starter? I mean, not more than like 120 innings, maybe. No. So, you know, maybe you try to stretch him out, see if you can get him a couple of times to throw 2 or 3 innings, give him some more days off, and kind of do a bullpen by committee for the next couple of weeks, you know, and see if you can make it work that way. Because, you know, you do, like we said, they still do have a shot to get in the postseason, but you've also got to think about the bigger picture and how you're going to set things up for next year.
That you do. And you look, like you said, at Reyes. I mean, he was an all-star this year. He set the saves record to start a career. You know, he had a great first half. I mean, one ERA in the first 81 games. It's now jumped up to 295. But like you said, he's pitched more innings this year than he's pretty much pitched in his entire major league career, at least at the major league level. So there is going to be some wear down. And, you know, they put Gallegos in the closer role tonight. He got a 1-2-3 inning. He went through the heart of the Reds lineup. So he does have the ability to do that, but you're going to have to lean on guys and the guys that they got off the scrap heap. You know, you look at a TJ McFarlane, you look at a Luis Garcia. And you know, I was thinking back to, you know, the last couple championship teams, and I go right back to 2011. I mean, you could be looking at McFarlane and Garcia as the Zibchinsky and Dotel of the season, where, you know, they pick these guys up that you're like, okay, what are they actually going to do for us? And, you know, both those guys struggled in their first couple outings for the Cardinals. But since then, I mean, Garcia has been a strikeout machine. McFarlane came in tonight and he did get second and third with one out. He gave up a double, but then he got the ground out to Arenado to get Votto at the plate. And then he got another out to get out of the inning, a great called third strike on Tyler Naquin. So, you know, you do have to rely on some of these guys. And Schilt even said earlier this year, you know, it was right around that Cubs series where everything kind of blew up, that, you know, he's like, well, what do you expect me to do? Pitch these guys, these three guys, every single game just to ensure the victory? Well, we're seeing why he said that, because these guys are starting to wear down a little bit because they did have to use them so much. And whether that's because of necessity or because that's just how they ran them out, it goes back and it makes you look at the bullpen uses that we had when Mike Matheny was here. Not much has changed in that time frame. The coaching change didn't do what you expected it to do in certain aspects of the game. The bullpen is still a disaster. Andrew Miller just went on the IL again. They brought Cody Whitley up. So, I mean, it's still that bullpen mismanagement that you talk about that is a bit frustrating. And you could sit there and say the Cardinals may be closer to catching the Dodgers for the first wild card if the bullpen was managed correctly this year.
Yeah. And, you know, it's weird because Schilt did a pretty good job when he took over from Matheny and then the last couple of years. But, yeah, this year there's a lot of similarities between the way Mike Schilt has handled his bullpen and his pitching staff to what Matheny did those last couple of years when he kind of wore people out and it was just a train wreck down there. So you hope that Schilt learns some lessons and changes the way he does some things. But
I have a quick question on this, and this is something that just kind of popped into my head, and it goes back to the conversations that we've had about Mozeliak especially, and it's about job security. When Mike Schilt was at his best, it was when he was in that interim role, not sure if he was going to get that management position. And now that he's got the contract and all of that, you know, does he look at what Mozeliak has kind of been able to construct here, what Michael Gersh has been able to kind of construct here, where it almost feels like there's like a shield around them that they can make a bunch of mistakes or maybe not be as aggressive or what have you, where the mindset of the GM and president of baseball operations has kind of shifted down into that managerial piece as well, where it's like, okay, maybe I can't take risks, but if I don't take risks or if I do something wrong, I'm not going to get in trouble because the guys above me, and it's the mindset of, you know, the work ethic too. You know, if the people above me aren't doing it, why should I be expected to adhere to those standards as well? Is there any correlation between the fact that you've seen the issues up at the top and no real retribution? Now it's trickled down into that management staff where it's like, well, you know, I could be aggressive, but, you know, if I go out there and I screw up or we lose a game, I'm not really going to get in too much trouble. I'm not going to get fired. I mean, is there like I'm trying to think what the word is. I lost it, but like a culture. Is there a culture of like, I can do terrible and, you know, I'm still here?
It's possible, although there shouldn't be, because Schilt's only got one more year left on his deal because that was a 3-year deal they signed him for. So next year is his last year on his contract. You know, and if he struggles, he will be the fall guy. I mean, let's be honest. You know, Mo will throw him under the bus and we'll move on to another manager. And, you know, but yeah, there really shouldn't be a whole lot of that with Schilt because, like I said, he's got that 1 year left. So he's going to have to win next year. I mean, and he can still win this year. I mean, they can still make a little bit of a run here. But yeah, he's definitely going to have to show something next year, I think, to get an extension or to continue on as manager.
Yeah, but once again, that'd be the final year of a contract where he knows he's got to prove himself to be able to get that advancement. It's just like free agency. When, you know, how many times have we seen a guy in the final year of free agency have a blow up year and then all of that stuff happens? So it's just a really interesting case study for me because you see what Mozeliak's, you know, had to deal with and what he's the choices he's made, and he's still there. So it's a real, real interesting case study for sure. So let's talk a little bit about the week that was, because it was a 500 week. It was some good, some bad, some ugly. They split the series with the Tigers. Jack Flaherty goes down in that first game after two innings plus. They end up losing after making a run in the eighth inning. But then they bounce back with a 3-2 victory the next day on Wednesday in 10 innings. It was the Paul Goldschmidt show, two home runs and scored the game-winning run on the Lars Nootbaar home run. And Goldie continued to hit well throughout the weekend in Pittsburgh. And then tonight, the two-run home run as well. He has just been probably the most consistent hitter on this team for the last couple of months outside of this past week, which we'll get to in the player of the week announcement, which, okay, there's another feather for this guy. But talk about Paul Goldschmidt and kind of what he's meant to this team this year. And we've gotten what we've expected from Paul Goldschmidt for sure.
Yeah. You know, I mean, he started out and didn't have a great April and May, although he was hitting the ball hard, you know, didn't have a lot to show for it. And I argued with a lot of people on Cardinals sites in different places saying, you know, people are like, oh, Cardinals never should have gotten him. He's old. He's done. And I said, you watch. We get to September, he's going to be around 300, 30, and 100. And people are like, oh, no way, not this year. Well, guess what? He's hitting 290 with 23 home runs, and he's at 79 RBIs now with a month to go. So he's going to be close. He may not get to 30, but he's going to be in the high 20, 27, 28, 29 home runs. He's going to be right around 100 RBIs, and he's going to be in that 290, 300 batting average. And let's not discount his defense. The guy's made one error this year. I mean, he's been unbelievable at first base. Anybody that saw the game yesterday in Pittsburgh, Nolan Arenado and Paul Goldschmidt made one of the best plays you're ever going to see a third baseman, first baseman make. Nolan made a diving play, knocked the ball down, and then literally from his knee, halfway on his back, threw to first base, had no idea where first base was, couldn't see it when he threw it. And Goldie literally did the Superman, complete sprawl out, like the tip of his spike on the base laid out to stay on the base and get the out on the other end. I mean, they both should win Silver Sluggers and they both should win Gold Gloves. I mean, we can talk all we want to about Nolan having a down year, but again, same thing. He's going to be around 30 and 100. So, you know, when you talk about this offense being not great this year and disappointing, those two guys are going to put the numbers up that you expect and you should be happy that they have.
Very much so. I mean, I think people were expecting Nolan to come in and just light the world on fire. And you go back and you look at what Goldschmidt did last year, and you look at any player coming into a new team from either a trade or free agency, that the first year is always going to be a struggle. It really, really is. And the fact that he's going to sit there and he's batting 255 right now, I think that's good. I mean, people had questions about how he was going to hit outside of, Coors Field, but he's hit a bunch of home runs. None of them have been in Coors Field. He's played solid defense. He's gotten through the bad parts of this season, still with a smile on his face. You can tell he loves playing here. So you've got that, and then you've got Dylan Carlson now batting 260. You've got Tyler O'Neill batting 273. Edmundo Sosa batting 273 and playing phenomenal defense. The barehanded play he made tonight was just another indication of that. He had two triples in that 13-0 win against Pittsburgh on Saturday night. So I don't know if, Sosa's probably not the answer at shortstop for sure. But once again, that you look at championship teams, and it's usually those unsung guys, the ones that come out of nowhere, even if it's just for a season or a half a season, that could make the difference. And you look at a guy like Sosa, he might be that kind of guy.
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought this up, because I'm going to say this now because I don't want to hear it in the offseason. I don't want it, because there are going to be fans that are going to go, we don't need Trevor Story. We don't need Kyle Seager. We don't need any of those guys, or Corey Seager, not Kyle. Kyle's his brother. We don't need any of those guys. Did you see what Edmundo Sosa did for a month? You know, and Cardinal fans do that. They watch two or three weeks and they're like, this is the greatest guy ever. Don't make any moves. You know, Edmundo Sosa is not the answer at shortstop every day. I'm just throwing that out there. I'll probably make some people mad by saying that. But, you know, he's a really good bench player. He's a really good role player. But you still need to upgrade at shortstop. You know, you need somebody else, whether it's, you know, Story or one of those other guys. But Edmundo Sosa, you can't go into next season thinking that he is your everyday shortstop next year.
No, not at all. I mean, like you said, he is a bench player, and he's a good guy off the bench. He's got speed. He's got the ability to make contact. So he is a good bench role player. And then, so we'll this is another one. Fans are going to see this, and they're going to be like, ah, see, we told you you didn't need Colton Wong. It's because we've got player of the week, Tommy Edman. 12 for 26, 462 average, 7 runs, 2 home runs, 10 RBIs, 2 stolen bases this past week. He had a hell of a week. He really did. I think it was 4 straight games with multiple RBIs in those games. But you still look at the season-long statistics, and Colton Wong is still a better player than Tommy Edman. I mean, yes, it's closer than I think we all thought it was going to be, but Colton is still a better player than Tommy Edman, and yet you're still going to have people going out there and say, yeah, just same thing with Sosa. Oh, we don't need these guys that are going to be better than them. We've got this guy. And Edmund's another guy that is probably a guy that could come off the bench and you'd be okay with that because he is a decent defender. He does have pop, but we saw him kind of exposed tonight, and they talked about it on the broadcast. A guy with a good changeup is going to be able to get Tommy Edman out. That's what he struggles against. And you saw that with Castillo tonight. He had a good changeup, and Tommy 0-for-3. I mean, it's right there. It's surprising. So don't take this NL Player of the Week thing and say, hey, we told you so. It's just not going to fly.
No. Tommy Edman's a good ball player. And I criticize him a lot. He is a good ball player. But I think he's better served to play that Ben Zobrist role where you move him around. He may start 3 days a week, 4 days a week. You can play him at third. You can play him at second. You can play him in short. That's where Tommy Edman will be at his best, and that's where the Cardinals will be at their best. When they have him on the bench and they can move him around and give guys days off, it just makes this team better. That's my hope for next year, is that Nolan Gorman's your everyday second baseman, and, you get Tommy Edman some days, because you're not going to want to overexpose Gorman next year either, because he's still going to be really young. So, you get Edman some starts at short. You get Edman some starts at second. He can fill in it short a little bit. You put him at third every once in a while to give Nolan a day off. And then you can stick him in different spots in the outfield every once in a while to give a guy a day off, or let the DH thing kind of rotate around. So, he can still get plenty of playing time. But, I think Tommy Edman's a better guy when he plays that Zobrist role. Ben Zobrist was like that. He was a great player when he played 3 or 4 days a week. When he played every day, he was exposed a little bit.
Yeah, that's exactly how it plays out. And just to kind of put the bow on the player of the week thing, it was Missouri's week for sure. Salvador Perez got the AL player of the week, 6 home runs and 14 RBIs. Now, we saw him up in Kansas City when we were up there for that Cardinals Royals series. And if you haven't had a chance to check out the interviews from the Negro League Baseball Museum and the Kansas City Royals Hall of Fame, make sure you go to our YouTube and our Facebook pages and check those out, because they were a lot of fun. But in that series, Perez, up until really his final at bat in that Sunday game, pretty much struggled in that series. Then he did hit that home run in the Sunday game, and he's kind of been back to himself since then. And he had a massive week last week, a couple of grand slams in back-to-back games. Is Salvador Perez the best catcher in baseball right now?
He's right there. He's right behind Yadi. I mean, he's got more power than Yadi does, obviously. And he's not very far behind him defensively. So he's right there as one of the best, definitely. And Kansas City fans treat him, he's loved in Kansas City like Yadi is, and Yadi's one of his idols, and he's talked about that multiple times over the last few years. You got to give the Royals a lot of credit. The Cardinals went up there and swept Kansas City, and since then the Royals have played really well. They beat up on Houston. They beat up on the Cubs. Royals fans are actually talking about them finishing the season 500 now, because they're seeing signs and they're playing a lot better baseball. So kudos to Kansas City. Hopefully they can make a run and get close to 500. And hopefully we see Bobby Witt Jr. in September. And hopefully we'll have good things to talk about the Royals going into next season.
Very much so, because we definitely want to continue to talk about them, because we want to forge that relationship with the Kansas City side of the state, because we've got them, and you got the Chiefs getting ready to get underway against the Browns later this year, this month, really. We're not in September yet, but it seems like we're in September. Before we move on from baseball, though, I got to just get your quick reaction, because we talked a little bit about potentially seeing Nolan Gorman up here in September. We're a couple days away from September and the September call-ups. It is not like it used to be in the past where it's a bunch of guys coming up because of the rule changes and because minor league seasons have gone a little bit longer than they normally have. But who do you see the Cardinals potentially bringing up as their call-ups at this point in time?
That's a really good question. I think there's a chance we see Nolan Gorman. I'm not 100% sure it happens. There's a chance we see Matthew Liberatore. He's pitched really well for the last almost month. You know, there's a chance you might get him up here in the bullpen and get some experience. A guy like Nick Plummer, who's a first-round pick, has done really, really well the last couple of months. He may be up here. Some guys like that, you know, it's just hard to say because, like you said, the season's going a little bit longer in AAA this year than normal, so they're playing a couple of weeks into September. So we may not see a whole lot of guys get called up until mid-September when the AAA season ends. But those would be three guys that I would definitely kind of keep my eye on as possibilities that we may see up here.
Yeah, Plummer's been a guy that's really kind of had a rapid ascent as well. I mean, Gorman has at this point in the season as well. He's jumped a couple of levels, but Plummer as well has been a very pleasant surprise and a very big power surprise as well. He's done very, very well down in the minors this year.
Yeah. Yeah, Lucan Baker, another guy, big first baseman, who's got some pop. He's another guy that you may see on the bench in September at some point.
Oh, the future is bright for the Cardinals, and it's bright for the Royals as well. Like you said, Bobby Witt Jr. is a guy that can really make some noise, and I'm hoping he does because he's on my keeper fantasy league. So let's hope for a big year next year from Bobby Witt Jr.
Yeah, and the Royals have some really good prospects coming. You know, in the next few years, Kansas City is going to be right there making a run like they did with that group of Moustakas and Alex Gordon and Salvi and Kane and all those guys when they all came up at once, Hosmer. They've got that same kind of talent pool getting ready to come. So the Royals are going to be good in the next couple of years.
I-70 series, man. Got to bring it back.
That would be fun. That would be fun.
I think you and I would definitely travel between the two cities for those games.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And it would be fun. It'd be fun to have conversations with our buddies in the Royals Hall of Fame again too. Maybe we can go back and forth with Kurt a little more.
Yeah, I think that would probably be the right call on that one. All right, let's jump over to the NFL because we are just about a week away from the start of the regular season, and I'm almost as excited about the start of this season as I've been for football in a very, very long time. And I know that being said, you know, you've got the St. Louis NFL lawsuit going on, and there's still a lot of negative things that surround the NFL. But when you look purely at the game, this has got to be one of the more exciting seasons to come this year because you've got Tom Brady coming back after a championship, trying to win again with the entire Buccaneers team that won coming back. You've got Patrick Mahomes coming off of his toe injury, looking to get back to the top. You've got the Bills and the Browns really pushing as well. And then you got some decent teams in the NFC that, you know, you look at a team like New Orleans, who's down after Drew Brees. What are they going to do? You've got, you know, the Giants, who could be a dark horse team. You've got the Green Bay Aaron Rodgers saga. You got Chicago with their stuff. I mean, this could be a really, really intriguing year.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. And, you know, it's going to be different because we've added a week. There'll be 17 games this year, which it's going to take a while to get used to that idea. But another week of football is not a bad thing. Yeah, like you said, you know, the AFC especially is going to be really fun to watch because there are so many good teams in the AFC. You know, Kansas City, you would think, is kind of the cream of the crop, although, like you said, Buffalo is going to be right there. Cleveland, that AFC North, I mean, Cleveland's going to be good. Baltimore took a big hit. J.K. Dobbins is out maybe for the year. That's really going to hurt their running game. Pittsburgh, you know, from everything I heard, Ben Roethlisberger is healthy and looks pretty good. So the Steelers are going to be right there. Cincinnati is going to be interesting to watch. Joe Burrow is healthy. You know, see what the Steelers can do. You know, AFC is going to be interesting. NFC is going to be interesting. There's not nearly the talent in the NFC that there is in the AFC, but there's so many questions. And I'll be honest with you, my sleeper team in the NFC is going to be the Washington football team. I think with that defense – and Fitzmagic, if he can just not turn the ball over, which has been his bugaboo quite often as he starts throwing a lot of interceptions. If he can not turn the ball over a lot and just really guide that offense, be a steadying influence, with that defense, they could be really, really tough in the NFC.
Well, I mean, I picked them to beat the Bucs last year in the wild card round because I thought that defense could harass Tom Brady, and they did. They played a really tight game against Tampa Bay, and that was a Tyler Heinicke at quarterback, you know, former Battle Hawk, But you get a guy like Fitzpatrick in there, and you see what he can do for a team. Now, the one thing, and aside from the turnover bugaboo, the fact that he hasn't really had a lot of full season, sometimes not his fault. You know, sometimes he gets pulled for reasons that, you know, make you question why he got pulled. But I think that's the one thing that you have to look at and go, is he going to be able at his age now to be able to complete a full season and lead a team deep into the playoffs? I'd like to think so, because I think if anybody deserves a chance at a championship run, it's Fitzpatrick for everything that he's done with a multitude of teams. I would love to see him get a chance at a championship, but there is that just that one piece that goes, man, can he do it a full season, and will they let him do it a full season?
I think they will. I think they will, because there's not that young quarterback behind him that, you know, they're dying to get in there. I mean, you look at some of the places that he's been, you know, he was in Buffalo and was playing all right, but then you had a young Josh Allen there that they were ready to have take over. He was in Houston and playing okay, but you had a Deshaun Watson there. He was in Miami and was playing really well, but you had Tua there. So, you know, there's always been this quarterback there that's kind of the next big guy that he's kind of been the placeholder until the team thought that guy was ready. So I think in Washington, they brought him in thinking, okay, this is that veteran guy that with this defense and with the weapons he has around him can lead this team and get him to the playoffs. And I think it's going to happen, because I think the NFC East is not very good. Dallas, you know, nobody knows when or if Dak Prescott's going to be able to play. I mean, some reports say he's not going to play all year. Some reports say he's not that bad. You just don't know. Nobody knows, honestly, other than I guess maybe Jerry Jones, if or when we'll even see Dak Prescott. The Giants have a ton of questions. The Eagles, obviously, you know, are not thrilled with their Jalen Hurts because they went out and traded for Gardner Minshew the other day. So, that's going to be really interesting. And then, like you said, the South, you know, you've got Tampa there. But then, you know, what's New Orleans going to do? They named Jameis Winston their quarterback. And not only what are they going to do at quarterback, are the Saints even going to be able to play in New Orleans this year after what's happened in New Orleans this week? Thoughts and prayers to everybody down there, because it brought back a lot of bad memories watching that hit them again 16 years later, almost to the day. But, you know, it's going to be interesting to see what they do. What's Carolina going to look like? You know, is Sam Darnold going to be able to run that team? The Falcons? There's just a lot of questions. Same thing in the North. How does Green Bay play with Aaron Rodgers? And the West, too. I mean, what happens out West? Is Russell Wilson still not happy in Seattle? Does he not play well because he wants out? You know, what do the 49ers do with their quarterback situation? You know, the Cardinals, is Kyler Murray going to be able to play at a high level at this league? Nobody's really sure about that yet. I mean, there's just a ton of questions in the NFC.
Well, when you look at San Francisco, Trey Lance actually has a bit of an issue. He basically chipped a bone in his hand, and he's actually going to be out. He actually chipped a bone in one of his fingers. He's going to be out a week before he can get back to practicing again. So Jimmy G will get the start in week one, but there has been a competition there all preseason long. And the fact that they hadn't announced their week one starter before this chipped bone made you think that Trey Lance was a lot closer to being ready to go as the starter for San Francisco than I think people were expecting. You know, my boss at Chick-fil-A is a huge 49ers fan. I mean, huge. And, you know, he was talking about that they're going to be running a college-style offense because it's going to be Trey Lance. I mean, he's going to be the quarterback sooner rather than later. And, I mean, it made sense because, you know, he's a guy that comes out of North Dakota State, not necessarily playing at the high, high level of college football, but still, if you're able to have that familiarity with the offense, maybe it helps you transition a little bit. But that's a scary proposition for me, to go from what they were doing to a college-style offense with a guy that could be good but didn't play at the highest level. It's a little scary to be a 49ers fan, I think.
Yeah, I think it's a big mistake to count on Trey Lance to play a whole lot this year because he didn't play, you know, the big competition. You know, he never has really played, you know, big-time schools, big-time competition. And, you know, accuracy has always been his issue. He's got a big arm, but, you know, there's a lot of questions there. So I think Jimmy G should be their starting quarterback, although you just said Lance is hurt. Jimmy will probably get hurt in week one, and then San Francisco will have to play like the first 5 weeks with their third string quarterback again.
Is it still JT Beathard?
Probably. Yeah, so, you know, there's just so many questions about the NFC. You know, and we didn't even talk about the North. What's Chicago going to do with their quarterback situation? You know, is Andy Dalton starting? Is Justin Fields ready? You know, who knows? You know, the Lions are going to be awful, I think. The Vikings have all kinds of talent, but can Kirk Cousins live up to that contract? You know, what does Aaron Rodgers do in Green Bay? You know, I think they're probably going to be pretty good. I think him and Devontae Adams are going to do everything they can to go out there and win a championship and then use that as another way to force their way out of Green Bay. So, yeah, it's going to be really interesting to see how it all plays out. And we'll be starting, a week and a half, I guess?
Yeah, next Thursday night.
And that first game is going to be ugly because it's Tampa and Dallas. And that could be a 45-3 game really easily. So
the Cowboys a lot of credit there with the 3 points.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't expect Dak Prescott to play, and I don't expect that defense to show up. And yeah, I think they're going to be awful. Honestly, I really do.
Well, looking at, you know, that NFC East, you're talking about that a little bit earlier. So Washington was the only team to win a preseason game. They went 1-2. The Eagles 0-2-1. The Giants 0-3, and the Cowboys 0-4. So, yeah, it definitely does not bode well for the NFC East this year. And, we saw that last year as well. That was before the Dak Prescott injury, is that East was just not a very good division. And they all dealt with injuries for the most part. I mean, you had, you know, Dallas had to deal with the Dak Prescott injury. The Giants had to deal with the Saquon Barkley injury. The Eagles had to deal with the Carson Wentz injury. And Washington just had to deal with the whole name change thing and all the controversy surrounding that. So the East had a lot that they had to go through last year. But of all the teams that maybe had learned from last year, it probably is going to be the Washington football team. And I, like you, would not be surprised if they end up winning that division and maybe even going on a run.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. Like I said, it wouldn't surprise me at all if that team won 10 or 11 games, basically because of that defense.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, because they can just destroy people. And if they don't turn the ball over, they can run the ball well. Fitzpatrick's just got to kind of manage the game. And, you know, they may win a lot of games 13-3, 10-6. You may see a lot of that come out of there. But, you know, they're one of those teams that can play old school football because that defensive line and those linebackers are just nasty.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure one of the greatest games I ever saw play was a 10-6 victory for the Rams against Tampa Bay. So 10-6 games could be a lot of fun. Speaking of some of these young quarterbacks as well, we talked a little bit about Trey Lance. It looks like Zach Wilson will probably get the start up in New York for the Jets. He's looked halfway decent this year. Justin Fields, you talked about him. Looks like he's going to start the season running the scout team, and Andy Dalton will get the first couple of starts. And I was reading an article from a Chicago paper today about how that's actually probably the right move because the offense right now isn't geared for Justin Fields to lead. The article broke it down as Fields isn't going to make a bad offense good. He's going to make a good offense great. And right now, might as well give Andy Dalton the chance to maybe steal some ugly wins with his experience versus letting Fields get destroyed because his offense can't play around him. I mean, it's just a matter of how long it's going to take Matt Nagy to pull that trigger and what is that mark of when you feel comfortable enough with your offense to insert a guy like Fields in there. I mean, is it kind of the same situation that we saw in Miami last year with Fitzpatrick and Tua, where, you know, Tua probably could have played week one, but that offense wasn't ready to go for him, and especially coming off the injury as well. Is it the same sort of situation where maybe 4, 5, 6 weeks into the season they make that transition from Dalton to Fields and just kind of run the rest of the year with him?
Yeah, I think it's just going to depend on how Fields progresses in practice and stuff. I'm still not sold on Justin Fields. I wasn't sold on him coming out of the draft. I'm still not now. So we'll just see. You know, I know Bears fans are hopeful that he's the savior as a quarterback, but I'm just not. I'm not convinced that he's going to be a good NFL quarterback. So we'll see what happens. But yeah, I think Andy Dalton's going to play the first 4 or 5 weeks.
And he's got like double the starts that Trubisky had, so he's got to be at least double the player that Trubisky was, right?
Yeah, sure.
I say that as a Trubisky fan. So
I know. yeah, I'm not sure. I hope for Bears fans' sake, and I like the Bears, that it works out. I'm just not sure about that at all. And talking about quarterbacks, and we brought up Tua's name. It sounds like, and I'm not sure how this is going to happen because no court things have been resolved to my knowledge, but it sounds like we're getting really, really, really close to Deshaun Watson being traded out of Houston. And all signs say that Miami is where he's going. So if he goes to Houston, if he goes to Miami, what does that mean for Tua? And, you know, does he go to Miami and then can't play for a year? You know, in Deshaun's case. You know, I mean, there's just so many things there. I'm not sure. I'm not sure how Miami can look at that and go, okay, Houston's asking for 3 number 1s and 2 number 2s. Yeah, let's do that when we don't know. He might not be able to play for 2 years.
Well, here's where I would – and this is the beauty and the curse of media, because I saw this come out a couple days ago, and a lot of places were running with it because it wasn't just Miami. There was another – I think it was Carolina – where the other team that was pushed out there as the possible teams talking to Houston about really trying to bring in Deshaun Watson. That's kind of was contrived almost of media trying to create buzz and saying, okay, well, these teams are talking to Houston about making a move, when it really turned out to, at least I think in Carolina's case, to be absolutely 100% false. And it just leads right into your question of why would Miami do something like this? Trade away all of that potential for an unknown quantity, essentially. Because if I'm Houston, I'm asking for Tua in the trade. I mean, I need a quarterback to come in to replace Deshaun Watson. I'm asking for Tua in that trade along with maybe a couple first round picks, maybe not three. So Miami's not going to look at that and say, okay, like you said, I'm not going to trade 2 first-round picks and a former first-round pick starting quarterback for a guy that maybe in 3 months might be slapped with jail time. So it's a really interesting piece because there could be some truth behind it. There could really be some truth behind Miami really trying to reach out and bring him in, because if everything's resolved and Deshaun Watson can play, you want Deshaun Watson as your quarterback. And Miami could challenge Buffalo for that top spot in the AFC East with Deshaun Watson. But to take that kind of risks, that kind of risk, I don't know if it seems like Miami would do that, but you know, it is also Miami. There's lots of gambling that goes down in Miami.
Right. And like you said, you know, it came out with Carolina a couple of days ago, but then, you know, Adam Schefter today was all over it saying, you know, that no, Carolina is not involved. It's Miami, and Miami is very interested. They have been since Houston said they wanted to trade him. You know, Watson's been in Miami multiple times, had dinner with teammates. I mean, it seems like that's the logical fit there if he's able to play, you know, and that all goes back to it. And it doesn't sound like Houston has any interest in Tua because they drafted the kid from Stanford. You know, that's kind of in the third round this year. They're looking at him to be their future quarterback. And so, I mean, I don't know what Tua – that's what I mean. I don't know where Tua would go. I'm sure there would be teams that would take a flyer on him, you know, because there are still teams that their quarterback situation's not great. Hell, maybe he goes to Philadelphia and joins that mess up there. You know, it's going to be interesting because, you know, there's no question Deshaun Watson's one of the top 5 quarterbacks in the league talent-wise. You know, it's just a question of, you know, when and if he's able to play. And so, you know, to give up 5 big draft picks like that, I mean, 3 ones and 2 twos, that's a lot of draft capital to give up for a guy that you're not sure is going to be able to get on the field.
That's Ricky Williams-esque, you know, back in the day with New Orleans. I mean, that's essentially trading away a draft for a guy. Now, I'll say this. You say he's been in Miami, and I'm sure that the Dolphins have probably done their due diligence and their research, and maybe feel like nothing's going to come of this entire lawsuit. Maybe it's a settlement that they're eyeing is going to happen. That might be why they are now starting to pursue it, where they feel more comfortable that nothing is really going to impact the fact that Deshaun Watson would be able to play. And that would be the one case where I could say, okay, if they have some sort of certainty that he will be with this team, I could see them maybe making a push and maybe putting together a package, maybe not that big. And I don't know if Houston will take anything less. I don't know, because you know, we saw what Bill O'Brien did the last couple of years, but now the new regime is in there. So you just don't know how it's going to play out. So it's a really interesting situation we got brewing a week and a half before the start of the season.
It really is. It's going to be interesting to see how it plays out. You know, Houston keeps saying they wouldn't take less, but, you know, they definitely don't want Deshaun Watson there. And then again, the other thing that Miami has to look at is, even if Deshaun Watson's able to play, there's going to be a lot of PR work you have to do there, because there's going to be a lot of negative publicity around him for the rest of his career. Found not guilty, you know, no matter what happens, there's going to be a group of people that have decided that he's done that and that he's a horrible person, and that's never going to go away. They're going to blame him for that and boo him. And, you know, so Miami's going to have to do a lot of PR there. And so is Deshaun Watson. Whenever he's able to, he's really going to have to do a lot of work to redefine his image now.
Very, very true. All right, before we get out of here, I got one more thing NFL-wise, and it's really got to deal with three teams, and it's got to deal with some major injuries that have happened in the last couple of days. And I kind of want to just get your take on how you feel like these injuries will affect the end product for these teams. And we'll start with Indianapolis first off, because it's not just one injury. It's one injury and a COVID issue that may derail the season to start off with. You got T.Y. Hilton, who re-aggravated his neck injury in practice. Been the number one receiver for the Colts for the last 9 years. Came back on a one-year, $8 million deal. The team doesn't believe it's season ending, but it is a disc injury, so you just never know how that's going to play out. Well, you couple that with the fact that Carson Wentz was just added to the COVID list as well, after being in close contact with someone that tested positive, which, ironically enough, shows you that Carson Wentz is not vaccinated, even though he hasn't said anything. He has to basically go through 5 straight days of negative tests for him to be able to get back to practice. And he actually was just cleared for full practice after his foot injury. So with all of that being said, losing your top wide receiver, your starting quarterback may or may not be ready for week 1. How do you see the Colts season playing out based off of this?
If they lose T.Y. Hilton for any extended period of time, it's going to be a huge blow. You know, that division's not great, but you do have Tennessee there, you know, that could really jump out and take a pretty commanding lead in that division if you miss any time. So I think it's going to hurt. And, you know, we don't know, like you said, Wentz just got cleared to practice, so we don't know how healthy he truly is either. So I think there's a lot of questions in Indy, and it could be another rough year for the Colts fans.
I think so, too. Now, you look at the team that was formerly the Colts and the Baltimore Ravens. You talked a little bit about this earlier. J.K. Dobbins, he will miss the full season with a torn ACL. He was going to be the main back for Baltimore this year. That does now fall to Gus Edwards. Not super inspiring, but he does have a track record. Last year, J.K., 134 attempts, 805 yards, 9 touchdowns, a big piece of this offense that was going to help Lamar Jackson. How does that affect the Baltimore season in that very, very tough AFC North, like you said earlier?
Yeah, that's a big blow, because he was supposed to be their featured back. And not only that, they've had 2 wide receivers go down that are going to miss significant time as well. So, that's really going to hurt. It's going to put more pressure on Lamar Jackson. And, you know, it puts a lot of questions on that Baltimore offense. And like you said, a very, very tough division.
Yep. And then one final team, and I don't really know how good they were going to be anyway, because you got Urban Meyer in his first season, you got a rookie quarterback, you had a rookie running back, but Travis Etienne will miss the entire season. He's got a Liz Frank injury, he's going to undergo surgery. Obviously, you got Trevor Lawrence starting there, a guy that I'm not particularly sold on, like you're not sold on Justin Fields. It was going to be a tough year in Jacksonville anyway. It's not a bad division. You know, obviously Tennessee is going to probably play very, very well, but then you've got the Houston situation, and then you've got
the Colts.
The Colts. Yeah. So Jacksonville is another one of those teams that you weren't really sure where they were going to end up anyway, but with ATN being out and you kind of lose that safety net that Lawrence had from Clemson, and what does that do for the Jaguars?
Well, you just said it. That was Lawrence's safety net. That was the guy he was comfortable with. You know, they were using him, they were planning on using him as kind of a pass catching back out of the backfield. It's going to hurt, you know, because it takes away that comfort level that he had there, the guy that he knew so well, that he's had so much success with. So, yeah, that's really going to hurt. I mean, Jacksonville, like you said, wasn't going to be real good this year anyway, but that's just a weapon that is going to hurt them that is not there.
It certainly is. So we got about a week and a half till the start of the NFL season. We will have our season, our divisional previews beginning on Wednesday. We'll run those up through next week, and then we'll make our picks next week before the start of the season. And before we get out of here, Scott, I know we talked a little bit about it last week because you had the photo shoot, but tell us a little bit about the Real Men Wear Pink campaign.
Yeah, I am going to be an ambassador for the Real Men Wear Pink campaign for the American Cancer Society, as I see the little logo up there in our corner. So yeah, through the end of October, I will be trying to raise some money, fight breast cancer, be doing a bunch of stuff. You know, as we get into October, we'll be wearing pink every day. I may even dye my beard pink for the month of October. So that's something that I've definitely looked into. But yeah, I'm going to be doing a bunch of different things. We've got an introductory gala coming up here in a couple of weeks. So we'll have a lot of talk about that. And then the campaign really kicks into full gear as we get it later into September and then into the month of October, as October is Breast Cancer Awareness Month. So we will definitely be doing more, but we're going to be putting a link to my page where you can donate and try to help us fight breast cancer and cancer in general. So be on the lookout for that on the show's page and all our social media and on my personal page. And please, if you can, donate some money, help us fight this nasty disease called cancer.
Yeah, I think everybody has been touched by it in one way, shape, or form. So we got to do our best to eradicate this, and we can only do that by doing research and finding ways to stop what is going on when it comes to cancer. So definitely looking forward to that. Like you said, we'll have the link on our pages and social media, so get out there, donate. And I can't wait to see the potential pink beard. I can't grow facial hair for crap, so the fact that you're able to grow it and you might be able to dye it pink, I'm looking forward to that for sure.
Yeah, it will probably be pink. I can pretty much guarantee that it will be, so be on the lookout for that.
Oh, it's going to be a lot of fun, and we can't wait to see the pictures from the photo shoot as well. So I know you are excited about that, and you're definitely the more photogenic of the two of us for sure.
Yeah, I don't know about all that, but
I think you are.
Thanks. Yeah, we'll see what happens. Hopefully we're going to see those pictures here in the next week or so. So as soon as we do, we'll get those out there so everybody can see me look stupid. Anyway, yeah, you know.
Still better than me. I'll leave it at that. I am a horrible picture taker, so I'm glad it's you and not me. But like we said, Cardinals 2.5 out of the wild card. They continue their series against the Reds tomorrow, hopefully, because there's a lot of rain in the forecast for Cincinnati with the hurricane bearing down on us right now. So maybe the Cardinals play tomorrow, maybe not. We'll see. And then they got a big series coming up against Milwaukee this weekend, which could really vault them back into that wild card race for sure. NFL starts next week. Mizzou on Saturday. Make sure you check out Scott and myself doing high school football games this week. We'll actually post the links for those games as well on our Facebook and social media, so you can listen to any of our games that we are covering as far as the high school season is concerned. Scott, you got anything else before we head out tonight?
Just we talked about it a little bit earlier, but again, thoughts and prayers to all the people in Louisiana, Mississippi, and, you know, all the southern states as the hurricane has come inland and is cutting across. Like you said, it's headed over towards Cincinnati going that way. So there's going to be a lot of rain, a lot of flooding, a lot of damage. So just everybody be safe, and hopefully we can get the hardest hit areas, New Orleans and all of that area, rebuilt and get those people happy and healthy and get things back to normal as soon as possible.
100% agreed. And one quick programming note, because of the upcoming high school season, we'll be taking Friday nights off because we'll both be calling games pretty much every Friday as well. And because of my hockey schedule, Tuesday nights will also be taking off as well. So you guys, Mondays, Wednesdays, Thursdays will be very likely when you're going to be seeing us on here. We may pop in on the weekend here and there as well, just to kind of keep up to date as far as college football is concerned, because I mean, you can't go 3 days without talking about college football. So we might be able to find a way to do some recording and pop some stuff out on the weekend as well. But definitely make sure you join us Mondays, Wednesdays, Thursdays for sure for live shows. And outside of that, we'll be able to post when we're going to be going on for other dates and times. We've got a lot of potential interviews coming up as well, trying to nail down Kevin Wheeler. Still, we've been having some trouble with that for sure, but we hope to have Kevin on very, very soon, as well as a couple other people that we're going to keep in the back pocket for right now. Got a really good potential hockey interview coming up in the next couple weeks potentially as well. So for Scott, I'm Wags. Thank you guys for joining us tonight. It's good to be back. Make sure you guys stay safe out there wherever you're at, and we will see you guys on Wednesday night.
Hey, it's you, man, here from Casey. For all your sports news, catch the Toasted Tavern with Scott Tobin and the man called Wags weeknights at 9 p.m. You can follow Toasted Tavern on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. Let's get toasted.